Welcome back to Brass Tacks. This is Sankey Price with you. Ronnie Clark in the chair, 4341790, and keep your WhatsApps flowing in at 266-4862, and I'll share a number of them with you, but I'll first deal with this call. Good morning, you are on the air.
Good morning, Mr. Price.
How are you today?
I am good, thank you.
Good.
I'm calling about some old car that I was calling every year that I could find for about 2 years now.
Where's that?
And these old cars full of rats. This is at Reservoir Road Lodge in Michaels. People just come and dump them there up behind by me. Mm-hmm. And some big rats, you know. Mm-hmm. I like called last week. I was calling MTW. I call all about.
This Reservoir Road, where's this again? Where's Reservoir Road?
Reservoir Road is, you know, they have a tire shop on. When you leave Simpson Motors and going to university.
Yes.
Right.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Then okay. They have a dialect house on right with a lot of bush around it. The young man died. And I was there last sometime back and I see a rat come out. Then if I didn't run in, so he would eat me.
He was that big?
Yeah.
A lady or gentleman wrote here that they have rats as big as cats up by them. And while you're at it, I can tell you now that we have people talk about Rendezvous Gardens. I live in Rendezvous Gardens, and there's an unsightly number of cars on a vacant lot, 5 cars to be exact. The children no longer have anywhere to play, as the lot was cleared by a very generous guy in the area just for that purpose. These damn people move in and everything went downhill. I have complained to the relevant authorities, but nothing has happened. I am very annoyed to have to look at that mess almost every day. What can I do?
That is what happened to me. I had a bad accident and I could hire you up, but I take myself and I go up there and I clean up there. As soon as they see it clean and smooth, everybody bring the cars and put them there. You can hardly see up there, up to there now. Mm-hmm. And not only that, the bush growing up between them.
Yes.
And is it not only for the rat, but the man rat too. Okay. And it makes you scared to even look out your house after 6 o'clock.
Oh, dear. That is really not good.
And complaining. I need help with the Thursday last week. I went to a funeral at Sharon and I saw the minister for here. Mm-hmm. And I asked him to help me. Tell me he didn't try to see what he could do. I asked everybody. And I was so glad just now when I heard you on the radio. I said, well, I hope I get some help now.
Well, I certainly would like to see that. This one, tell me if this is it. I live in Cairfield. The property next to me has so much abandoned machinery. The man next door does nothing with them. The grass is growing through them, etc. There's also a derelict shed where the stray cats have made their home that is leaning. It is an eyesore and a breeding ground for mosquitoes. A lot of inspectors came and nothing was done. Even his family is fed up. And that's in Cairfield. I can also tell you about Dodd's Land in St. Philip. This, as I was saying, you know, this thing is really all over Barbados. And
since the cans cut, uh-huh, rats don't have anything to eat.
Yes.
Oh, another thing, people was talking about the monkeys. Since the people destroy the monkeys home and put more concrete, the monkeys just looking for something and people telling you, don't kill them. Mm-hmm. You don't have to kill them then. Put a gallon of rum mixed with molasses in a pan, they can drink it. And like, don't speak when you can hold them and do whatever you want with them.
Really? Really? All right. Well, thank you very much for calling. And I note again, Midway Lane, Pinelands. Those cars were at the top of the gap for years, this person is saying. And then there is one here again in Shop Hill, St. Thomas, after the church. The whole road is taken up with old cars. And then there's Sunnyside Court, Deacon's Farm, St. Michael, where a lot of cars are there as well. This is Brass Tacks. You're on the air. Hello.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air, sir.
Hi, morning, Sanka. How are you?
I am well, thank you.
Sanka, there's just 2 points I wanted to talk about. The first one was the last caller talking about the buses and the cost of buses.
Yes.
By his admission, the revenue stream would be about $300,000+ that he was looking at. Mm-hmm. And it is those kind of quick analysis on the back of a pad that you got to be so worried about.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was clear to him that it was the easy thing to run the transport board, because mm-hmm. it would be 16 trips, all full, all day.
Mm-hmm.
So that's about 600 persons a day,
mm-hmm.
All the time. And then by the calculations that he made, which he probably didn't add up, the cost that he just could see on the back of it was about another $307,000. So mm-hmm. by his own workings, the transport board would be breaking even.
Yeah.
But he didn't look at insurance, security, maintenance of the plant and facilities, the overheads associated with the management of it, and all the other things that has to be taken into account when you have an enterprise such as that. So he was cautioning about having a board of people who don't understand these things, and I would suggest that he'd probably be one of those persons you wouldn't want to have on the board, because he's not taking a full look at the real cost
mm-hmm.
of running a transport board. Now, I agree with you that the transport board in concept is not something that you probably want to stick around with for a long time. But that's if you were running a purely commercial enterprise.
Yeah.
You have to also understand that the transport board serves a social good, which is to take care of people and to move the persons around who are in areas that people probably would not, that the private sector or people who are more enterprising would not want to go to, or longer routes where you couldn't make an economic return. In other words, if I was going from Oystons to, say, Spitestown, in the present configuration, it's a straight run. In another way, it may be a stop in Bridgetown where you have to get off and pay another $2 to go forward, which would make the route a $4 route.
Mm-hmm.
So $2.50, whatever the route is, you may have to cut the route in half and make it a $5 route. But right now, we have persons who, given the nature of their job, could not actually afford $10 a day to move up and down to going to work. So I think a government has to look at the social impact of the decisions it makes. But I want to agree with you that the principal role of a transport authority ought to be on the regularization, the regulations governing the movement of persons, and the proper philosophical design of a transport system which has a combination of long-haul, short-haul, medium-haul routes,
mm-hmm.
probably allocated in probably a hub-and-spoke kind of arrangement, a north and south or something, constructed and managed in that way. So if you want to participate in government and private sector, all of you have to be dressed the same way and agree to routes, scheduling, and all of those other things. We can't have this kind of spasmodic approach to moving persons around and hope that everyone will comply because of goodwill. I think that even in one of the most lawless places that we could know, Trinidad and Tobago,
mm-hmm.
In terms of driving, not necessarily broadly, but when you go to their bus stands, people line up, the taxis line up and go, people know not to push. What they do on the road is another story. But we've got to approach it. We are a small country, and I think that we can actually, if we put our heads down and really, really think of the philosophy of why we have a transport structure and what it has to actually do in terms of national productivity, moving persons to work and to places on time, the energy savings that it can make, I suggest that if you had more buses on the road that are air conditioned, that many more persons would leave their cars at home and catch the bus once they knew that that bus would be coming to work, coming to their bus stops on time, generally, and you can travel in comfort. We as a people have to believe that we can do these good things because other persons can and actually do. So I think that we deserve a proper running transport structure, a mixture of government subsidized services led by private sector know-how, and I think that we could actually get it done.
all I can do is agree with you wholeheartedly, because you are expressing exactly what I think on this whole matter. Thank you so much for your contribution, sir. Really a pleasure talking with you. And we move on. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you again for sending in all these places where all these old cars are. Keep them coming. Keep them coming. All right, we go to the next call. Good morning. It's you on the air. It's 11:11.
Good morning to you, Mr. Price.
How are you, man?
I'm good, man. What about yourself?
I am well. I'm here. My WhatsApp is going crazy because I asked about this old car situation. It's something that it's really annoying me personally. And because the whole country looks unsightly, all these old cars all over the place. And so far we have 9 parishes that have been touched. People have written in about 9 parishes. And it shows just how bad this problem is. This person just wrote, good morning. I just heard you mention Dodd's Landing Church Village, St. Philip. Yes, so many old vehicles parked along the street. Horrible mess. Please, in all caps, can those in authority get them out of here? And I can go on. There's St. John, Edgecliff Gardens, St. John, and they have several old and abandoned vehicles, and the area is also overgrown with bush. It's the perfect condition for rodents and mosquitoes to thrive. Please, we would like it clean and maintained. And I keep trying, my problem, I've been saying this for years, and I'm convinced of this now. We talk about, we need legislation for this, legislation for that. No. Yes, we would need legislation for some things, but invariably in Barbados, what we need is for the persons who have authority to do a certain job to do their job. This situation wasn't created last year or year before. It has been going on for years, and it needs to be dealt with. Anyhow, sir, that's my. I'm going to get off my soapbox and allow you to get on yours. You're on the air. Go ahead. Go ahead, Patrick. Patrick?
Hello.
Yes, go ahead.
Hello. Good morning, Sir Price.
Oh, we lost that call. Okay. Not like me, Patrick, who was on before. All right, sir, go ahead.
Yeah, I want to speak on transport.
Yes, sir, go right ahead.
I want you to look at the sugar industry and then compare transport. Years ago, we were talking about double cab buses. I recall when the sugar industry used to bag sugar, to move from bagging to bulk sugar, to bring along a small truck, and then they convert the trucks into one long truck. Now, if I had to do the transport, I would bring in no more than six double cab buses. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Three for Oyston's route, there is a long route, and one for Spikestone, 3 for Spikestone. I would not import any more buses. You see those buses that do Belgian tours and stuff, those old-time board-looking buses? I would start building a few of those buses to compensate for those routes. Because remember, when a bus leaves Bridgetown to go to Oyston, suddenly it carried 3 bus loads at one time because people get in, get out. You follow what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
And I can leave this because there's nothing to really discuss. You remember very well the former Minister of Transport said I can't remember if it was on air, but he made mention that he got transmission. Where a transmission had cost transport board almost $15,000, he was able to get, I think, the same Trinidadian consultant to get them for $5,000. It means, therefore, that shopping around and people in management do things as they like. But I believe that the transport board need to continue to build buses of their own. They don't need these long buses. And again, end on this. Why it is that transport, private transport people claiming they're making the money, and what they don't give up the industry. And I'm done with that. Thank you, Sanka.
All right, sir. It's 11:16, and just me spill up some more of this, please. There's an old car next to it. This is, Gall Hill Development, number 3, St. John. Apparently, there's some old cars there as well. Odessa McLean, Mylords Hill, Farm Road, St. George, Morris Gap, Westbury Road. Out there by the Olga Miller Nursery School in 6th Road, St. Philip. All these are where old cars are, and people are concerned and they want the whole place cleaned up.
Hello?
You are on the air. Good morning. You said you've been waiting for a while. You are on the air.
Yes, good morning.
Good.
Good morning. Want to talk about the road tax situation.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
On your program, the minister said that at every location, there's somebody there that could allow you to pay your road tax in installments, correct? I have tried every location, and I'm told that no such person exists, and you have to pay it all at one time. So I'm just calling to see if that somebody could investigate this and get back to us, because we're hearing one thing, and then something else is being done. Because the guy, the person in charge of the Oyston branch looked at me as though I was a fool.
Yes, okay. Well, thank you very much for raising that. Thank you very much for raising that. You're on Brass Tacks. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning to you, Mr. Price.
Yes, sir. I don't know what happened there just now.
I'm uncertain as well. But what I really want to speak to you this morning on, as it relates to your topic of all abandoned vehicles. And I will mention to you the location of one at this time, and then I will seek to rehash my solution that I have given a long time ago on this program. Unfortunately, it was not taken by the then Minister of the Environment in former administration. Yeah. But suffice to say, Mr. President, that if you come to St. Lawrence Gap in the area of Timeout, and you pass them, you're going into the gap, if you're going towards Sanders, there's an immediate left turn after you pass the Timeout. There has been an white abandoned car there now for years. To the extent, Mr. Price, that whenever there's a heavy downpour of rain, persons traversing that particular road have difficulty negotiating their path on the said road. Not to, even to mention the high levels of water that creates and that's a the space right there that rendering the exit of the same Timeout impossible. And this has been happening for years. But to compound the situation now is an abandoned white vehicle at the side of the road. And that would be the better part of 2 years, Mr. Price. But when I spoke about these instances, I said that all of these vehicles have owners or would have had an owner. The government must get serious. And the environmental department must get serious in that what government needs to do, even if it means amending legislation or drafting new legislation, where the government will place on the vehicle, Mr. Price, a date for the removal of the vehicle once it was stationary for a period no less than a year or 2 years. Once it's not movable, it's not moving, it's immobile, remove it at the expense of the previous owner. Now, how do you know the owner? The vehicle had to have a registration before. So the last person to whom the vehicle was assigned and registered is the person to whom the bill will go. Now, if the person gives by dealer gift or any other form the vehicle over to another, then the person must, in writing, give that information to the licensing authority to free themselves of any bill that will come their way as it relates to the removal of the vehicle. But we've got to get serious, because all of these abandoned cars, Mr. President, you said the road, were vehicles that were registered with license authority, so we can find out who were the previous owners of the vehicle. Move them at the expense of the previous owners. If they want them back, it will curtail two costs. The cost for moving it, and then the cost of paying to getting it back. It's simple. And it's all, you know, this is not rocket science. We need to contact MTW, licensing authority. License authority will give you the, give whoever is responsible or in charge or whatever as a so as applicable to the law, and give the information, give reason for putting the date on the vehicle for its removal is to give the individual to whom the vehicle belongs an opportunity to move it without an expense. If the date has expired and passed and the person haven't moved it, it will be moved at their expense. And then you give them a time period to pay the money or face some prison. You will see that all these, this whole motion with abandoned care will disappear. You got to get serious. Take the politics out of it and decide that enough is enough, Mr. Price, and that going forward, this is what will happen. So in other words, if you can bring, if the government, this route the government wants to go in, they can decide that they can give the public or persons who own these vehicles a period of 3 months, 5 months, 6 months, whatever the term that they're determined to get their act together. But when, on, let me say, on the 1st of February, this act come into being and all vehicles that are parked at the side of the highways, the roadways, the byways, impeding the flow of traffic will be removed at the expense of the last owner, given the person who have sold the vehicle, because sometimes you sell a vehicle, but the person don't re-register it. That person now responsibility would be to write licensing authority informing them I've sold your blow my vehicle, so therefore I am no longer attached to that vehicle and the number, so that whenever a bill is to be assigned, it would not go to the person simply because that they would have cleared the air relative to a letter in the licensing authority. Mm-hmm. That's how we can solve your problem, Mr. Fred.
I like your suggestion. This person here is saying there is already legislation regarding the removal of the vehicle for it to be charged to the owner. I had one removed by calling the police station. This is what, as I said, someone has just written here on WhatsApp. I would tell this person here that they are very fortunate that they were able to call the police station, because I know people who have called the police station. They've been told, call the polyclinic where the environmental health officers are. And then when you call the polyclinic, environmental health officers tell you there's nothing that they can be done. They just come, they just tell the person they got to clean up the place so rats can't be there. They bait it and that's it. But this has been going on now for a number of years. And I,
Mr. Price, if the government is serious, it take it out of the hands of those individuals and assign special persons all across this country who will identify the locations of all of these vehicles and make a move in the direction to have them move, give them the opportunity up front by way of a 3 months notice or 2 months notice that comes February 1st, March 1st, whatever, that this is what will happen, so that there will be no surprises and nobody will be able to call the calling program, you understand me, and jump off on the Kadir choir to say that, you know, they're unfair Bobby, unfair Tom. They'll be given advance notice, and then you move the vehicles. We got to get serious. So every environmental ministry is a task for them, assign individuals for the removing of the vehicles. And I believe that in 6 months time, government can have a rapid cleanup across this country with all of the abandoned carriage, and they will decide where to go to the dump or wherever to go to. As a matter of fact, there's some metal locations who are crushing them to pieces in no time.
Yeah, cozy up there in Warren's near, next to SBRC.
Precisely. Yeah. You understand? So if you get there...
I'm also wondering about that project that the Bino brothers had. Remember, they had to close down.
Precisely.
That project.
But they were inter as well.
Yeah, and the whole thing was shrouded in some sort of mystery as to why this thing occurred. But we'll try to get to the bottom of that. But thank you very much for your contribution. It was extremely useful. And I want to keep this debate going because, quite frankly, there's so many different areas that are coming in here right now. And I want people to continue because we're going to try to take this as far as we can, because we want to make Barbados as beautiful as possible. Well, get it back to looking as beautiful as it used to look a few years ago. And one of our first ways is getting rid of some of these old cars from around the place. And we can do it, Barbados. So keep the information coming. We go to another call. Good morning, you're on the air. You're on the air, good morning. Listen to your phone, not your radio. Good morning. All right, we go to another call. You're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Price.
Yes, sir.
Good morning. I want to make a comment on integrity legislation, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to say I'm no great fan of integrity legislation, simply because, one, already we have legislation establishing something called the Public Accounts Committee, and I don't know anything it has done on behalf of the people. In fact, and if you notice that every statutory board, every act setting up statutory boards state that they should present the audited financial statement within 6 months of the end of the financial year. And 6 months, to my mind, is a long time, because I remember when I was at work, we used to receive bank statements. In the bank, for example, we would receive bank statements within 3 months of the end of the financial, audited financial statement, within 3 months of the end of the financial statement for private sector entities. Good one. Now, but here's the situation. 6 months, and go check, you will see something. 6 years will pass, and there's no audited financial statements for many. In fact, I was shocked to hear that in some years ago, that national insurance, for example, with the people's money, they did have one for over 6 years. Mm-hmm. So the country is run very well managed. So I feel, to my mind, rather than dwelling on integrity legislation, I would like to see all of these things observed. For example, make sure that all, well, they say 6 months, by 6 months, ensure that all the audited financial statements for the statutory boards are in. The schools, ask about them. They are financed directly from the treasury for all the taxpayers' money. What mm-hmm. was the position of the schools?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then, of course, the Auditor General's report ensure that the recommendations are taken seriously. Because I saw a report in Sanders papers, I think there was some extract there about from the Auditor General's report on the Revenue Authority. I think you have seen it, huh?
Yes.
And tell me something. What do you think? that institution was supposed to make revenue collection better, right?
Yeah, but that's not the first time the Auditor General has had to have strong words on what is happening at the Revenue Authority.
I worked in the income tax department many years ago. I left school with his wife. I am sure that the income tax department, from what I saw there, was far better than that. I'm sure.
I don't know how this is going to be taken, but knowing the naysayers out there, is going to be taken negatively. But you set up a BRA with all good intentions. One would like to assume you staffed it with people who have full competence to do the job that needs to be done, and that you would also have, from their experience and their training, they would have set up systems or try to put systems in place that would be more efficient. But what we've been seeing, certainly from the Auditor General's reports, are that systems are lacking, and the question is why? Why is this happening? And there must be, I think, someone needs to tell us, the public, why this is happening the way it is happening, because it certainly is not doing anyone any favors when we have this situation. And what is so sad, I think, is that this folly is going on, the country is suffering. The country needs an efficient revenue collection agency. And people like to put politics in everything in Barbados, which is unfortunate. But the reality is that if you don't have an efficient revenue collection agency, if they're not doing their jobs as effectively and as efficiently as they should be doing, we all suffer from their inefficiency. The consequences we feel, all of us. So it is really, really important that they get it right.
But Mr. Ray, Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, wait, one point. What is sad, and I agree with you on what you said, but what is very sad is that when that institution was established, there was much talk about making the reason being as to make tax collection more efficient.
I remember that very well.
Right, I remember.
And that's why I said what I said.
Right, that's what you said. It's true.
But let's hope they get it right, because if they don't get it right, we all are going to pay. Well, we are paying the price for it right now. And they need to get it right. But it's not only them, huh? It's because I don't want to feel that we're just picking on bra. But there are too many instances in this country where it seems that we just can't seem to get it right. And the question I keep asking is, why is this? I mean,
no.
Isn't anybody reading and looking to see what's happening in other jurisdictions, how they are applying their systems? Is it a question of you need better software to reconfigure your systems in such a way that you can get these things done? What is lacking? Why are we having these difficulties? Is it that the persons who, the political masters, are not listening and are not giving you the level of attention that they should be giving you? I mean, because we could be here saying, oh, bra is this and bra is that, when in truth and in fact, the people from bra could, I mean, they can't, but they would have had report after report, and they would have said, look, we need to be able to do A, B, C, D, E, and it has not been listened to. So these are some of the things that happen too, and we are not aware of that. We in the public, we are not aware of that. But it's really, really sad what is happening, and quite frankly, it just can't go on. We cannot continue to have in this country this level of it really smacks like we're backward, you know, and we are not backward. We are educated people, we're proud people, and we can do better because we have been doing better. So why all of a sudden it just seems that everything is just going down? We have to stop that trajectory.
Mr. Price,
mm-hmm.
Let me say to you this. Consider that even back in, let's say, when this was when I left school, was around the 1960s. Anyhow, what I'm saying is, no, we have far better, more qualified people in these public sectors. In fact, you cannot be promoted to certain posts unless you have a degree or whatever that is. What is sad is that this is not being reflected in the quality of output.
Yes. Right? Yes.
But this is what you're saying, that's no.
Yes, yes, yes.
And this is what should concern Barbadians, that here we are spending on substantial salaries. In fact, right now, that's the major reason why we have the big fiscal deficit, paying these people.
Mm-hmm.
And why is it that you have all of these highly qualified people and a poor civil service? And Dan, I recall when I read some of the minutes written by some of the PSs, I worked in the premise office and I left school for a little while. And I could see the quality of those guys were far superior to what we have now. I mean, I have great respect.
But, sir, I'm not going to cast aspersions on those people because, as I said, the officers in the public service, unfortunately, they cannot come out and say, man, look, we have been given good advice. This is what we have been saying. This is what we have been doing. But nobody ain't taking me on. They can't do that. Okay, but they can easily be blamed. Anyhow, sir, and we have a full slate of calls, so we'll go straight back to the phone lines. Good morning, you're on the air.
Yes, Mr. Price.
Yes, sir.
I had spoken to you earlier about buses when I was dealing with the $60 million that you were talking about.
Man,
and the guy came in, I just need to make a rebuttal to what he said. Is that fair?
Yeah, make it fast, because there's so many people here who are saying that you don't have a clue, because so many buses are, all the time empty.
Okay, anyhow, let me begin by saying very quickly, my partners and I have several VAT-registered businesses in Barbados, and we were looking for a new venture to go into. And we said we were going to go into the transportation industry, but specific the long-haul bus route. So we did our necessary whatever we had to do, went on buses, And we did our due diligence, as we would say. Let's say that. I can tell you, on peak hours, on a bus in Barbados, a bus would carry about 120 passengers. When I say that, I mean, let's say going from Bridgetown to Bashiba in peak time. On that bus, you would have about 60, on that route, you would have about between 50 to 60 school children. So we say paying passengers would be about 50. But we did not even use peak hours. The times we looked at was between 10 in the morning and 2. And I'm telling you, the average bus carry per trip was about 40 paying passengers. That is a fact. That is why I said to you that a bus can do about 16 trips, 40 passengers paying $2 per day is $1,280. We did 6 days because Sunday is a little different. We say 6 days would be $7,680. And on Sundays would be, for a year, would be about $33,000. Our figures came out for a year at a conservative figure, because as I said, we were not using the peak hours, was $432,000. We looked at our expenses, and I use what Gregory Nichols said for a transport board. He said the service on a transport board bus per year was $40,000 to service it, which is quite high, but I'm using those figures. I say to you, that bus traveling every day with $500 in diesel was $182,000 a year. We also included $80,000 for overhead per bus. And we said that this bus would require about three drivers at about $800 per week, which came up to $124,000. So the expense against what we consider to be a conservative income in bus fares was about even. So that is why I say to you, so what else now can government be spending $60 million on? That was my question. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I want to get one. I understand what you're saying, and the only question I have to ask you is, have you invested in the transport business?
No, sir.
Why not?
Because you're not going to get the long haul route that easy. Nice. That's why I said to you that I know there are prominent people. I don't want to say political attachments, but there are prominent people who run buses in Barbados and are making a killing. And I know that for a fact. I wasn't giving you bogus information. That's why all the short routes have been taken out.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're very lucrative. You can make substantial money in the transport at $2. That's what I'm saying, at $2.
Yeah.
And I'm going to give transport board something that they can do. If the transport board can give a $10 day pass in Barbados, you pay $10 and you can catch whatever bus you want to catch. I guarantee you, their income will go up twofold. Because let's give you a very quick example. If I'm traveling on a Martins Bay bus from Martins Bay to Bridgetown,
I don't want to make you off midstream, but you hear the music in the background. That means we really have to take a break for the regional roundup. But thank you very much for your suggestion. And I would suggest, though, that you really contact some of the people in the ministry and try to share some of your ideas with them, because it sounds like you've done a lot of good research. So it would be interesting if we can take this a little further. Ladies and gentlemen, we have to take a break here for the regional roundup, and we'll be right back.